Mishle, Proverbs, modern psychology. We are in Perek Chav Zayin, chapter 27. Pasuk Tes Zayin, 27:16. Okay, this is actually a follow-up on last week's Pasuk, the last of last week's Pukim. So in Pasuk Tes Vav, in 15, it said that if you remember, the dripping of the rain, the drip inside of the house is as bothersome, as constant annoyance, as a contentious wife, a spouse who never leaves you alone, always has problems, always picks a fight. Okay, we talked about that last week. But then the pasuk then says, Shlomo Melech then says, Tzofneha tzafan ruach. Tzofneha is an interesting word. Tzofneha, it's actually an interesting use of it here. Tzofneha means here the hiding, someone who hides her. One who hides her, meaning what? Meaning the contentious wife. Someone who tries to hide their wife who's contentious. In this case, I believe Rashi says, Mi shesavor l'shomra mitaznu seha. Svunas ruachu, someone who tries to hide their wife, not only from their contentiousness. Rashi is now translating it not as that she's just she has a problem, but that she is licentious. I'm trying to think of good euphemistic words. She is adulterous. The point, says Rashi, is if you try to hold her back, if you try to, I don't want to use the word tame her, but if you try to restrict her from doing what she wants, what she desires, so then it's tantamount to tzafan ruach. It's like trying to hide the wind. You can't hide the wind. It's not you can't stop the wind from blowing, and you can't stop adulterous is the only word I can come with.
It said quarrelsome.
That's in 15. What does it say in 16? How does it translate number 16?
He regards the wind.
Okay, just translates it literally. Maybe in the footnotes it has other translations or explanations, but here it's referring to the Mesudas David. Similarly, says Hachoshev lahastir hadavar bifnei habrio. Someone who tries to hide the thing. What is the thing? So how does Mitzvah David explain in the last pasuk? Let me just check. Eshes midyanim nishtave b'chol yitim la'atrid as pala. Okay, he doesn't translate it as adultery. I guess that's only Rashi. But
it says lewdness here.
Lewdness, there you go. Okay, that's Rashi. That it's referring to some kind of sexual promiscuity. Mitzvah David doesn't go that far, at least doesn't say it explicitly, but he's saying that if you're trying to hide your wife's problems. You know, this is a very unfortunate reality, but sometimes, people have issues in marriage, and that marriage is contentious, and that marriage is, not getting any better. Neither side wants to make things better, or at least is not sacrificing to make things better. And then people are surprised when ultimately something happens. They split up, or there's some new arrangement, and they're like, whoa, I didn't even know. And that's because people pretend on the outside. People pretend, they try to hide things. But the more you try to hide things, the greater the consternation actually, the greater it gets. If you look at Tzunis David, he says, Kol od shigirtze lahaster es hadavar, the more you try to hide it, he mosefes veholeches. We've talked about this in the context of rebuke. But it's a similar thing when it comes to a man and a wife. That if the if the issues go unsolved, if the issues go unconsidered, non-considered, if they're not addressed, that you have issues, whether it's in a marriage or whether it's a specific topic, or could be with a colleague also, the more you try to hide it, the more it's just going to come out and fester. I guess it's somewhat situational about how this, festering is exposed. It depends what the thing it is that you're bothered by. But let's just take a sort of a simple example. If you are bothered by the fact that somebody is constantly, leaving, you know, I don't know, let's take something very innocent so that nobody, you know, feels guilty about it. But let's say you're upset that your spouse never, you know, caps the toothpaste or something like that. You know, never cleans up after themselves, never puts the laundry in the hamper, never takes the garbage, you know, out at the right time. But you don't say anything about it. You know, you don't want to make a fight. You don't want to cause any tension. You'd rather just let bygones be bygones. But then it happens over and over. And every single time it happens, you still get bothered by it. And you're bothered and you're bothered and you're bothered. And then all of a sudden, something else happens, completely different. Maybe that person was late, you know, picking up the kids or late coming home or you didn't do something else. You always do this. You do this and you never take out the trash and you never, you know, close the toothpaste. And you're like, whoa, 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 where did that come from? You never told me about that. Right, but it's because you tried to hide it, and you hide it, and you hide it. So that's maybe one understanding of what this means. So if nehat safan rach, if you try to hide or conceal the issues that you're having within a relationship, so then ultimately it's like trying to hide the wind. It will blow you over at some point. At some point, it is going to build, and it will create a significant mass that will ultimately have it, you know, reap its repercussions for not addressing it, you know, and it is true that you have to pick your battles. You know, you have to pick your battles, but that doesn't mean that you have to conceal your battles. There's a difference between, you know, ignoring something, pretending like it doesn't exist when it really does, and it really does bother you, and saying, you know, I'm not gonna make a fuss about it, but I'd really appreciate it if you took the garbage out earlier. But don't make a fight about it. That's not, you know, battling. Just telling them that bothers you doesn't mean that you're battling. It means that, okay, I'd prefer if you did something better. If it keeps happening, so then it might become a battle. But for the time being, you let them know. You don't battle it. But at least it's out in the open. You're not concealing it. The more you conceal it, the more it's going to fester and grow. So that's maybe one way of understanding it. I think another way of understanding it could be safan ruach means that sort of sofneha, someone who is trying to hide it to the masses, trying to hide it in public, trying to pretend like they get along perfectly, you know, and I've seen this also, very unfortunate, especially sometimes people try to address their issues by doing things publicly, right? We have problems whenever we're by ourselves at home, but when we're out in public, we get along. So let's just do more things in public. So then you're making that contrast even starker. And you're making that consternation at home even starker. Because then what's going to happen is, not only are you not happy at home, but what you realize is you're even more happy when you're not at home. Right? So it's not just that you're having problems in the house, but it's that you want to escape the house. Right? You want to get out of there. Right? So that's another type of issue that I don't think it's going to work out in the end of the day. But v'shemen yimino yikra, it's not only going to be ineffectual, it's not only going to be, you know, impractical to try to stop the wind, meaning to stop whatever issues you're having, but also v'shemen yimino yikra, the oil on your hands, this is saying your right hand, doesn't matter, the oil on your hand, it will be called. As one's right hand proclaims the oil. Long story short, I think what this means is Rashi says, Korihu atzaras lavo alav achi garshena kimitzor shamintar b'shemen b'boinati minis. Okay, Rashi says something I did not expect. I think I was looking for the mitzvah stuff, but Rashi says that it's like tzaras. It is going to spread and spread. Tzaras is going to, you know, just like on your hands with the tzaras, you have to get rid of it and then you anoint it with oil. That's the end of the process for tzaras. So that's what Rashi is saying here. That this kind of, you know, calamity, I guess, you'll be like a mitzora. I don't know, you can really do some heavy drash on that concept of mitzora. Maybe like the mitzora has to leave the camp, you know, dissociate from his relationships, that kind of thing. But Rashi doesn't say that. I was really looking for the mitzvah stuff, who says, Kamo Mosheach Atzmo B'Shem, and someone who anoints themselves with oil. Let's assume for today, you know, in today's world, what this really means is you put perfume on, some kind of deodorant, some kind of cologne. Right, that's what it means here by oil, at least according to Mitzvah David. Kimo hamosheach atzma b'shem, and im yirtze lahalim lo yuchal. Yeah, I don't know, you probably know more than I do, but if you put perfume on, you don't like the smell, tough luck. you know, because that smell's not going anywhere unless you, bathe with soap and water for a while or whatever. You know, that smell will continue. So that's what it's saying here. You know, you can't, just like oil will be found out if it's on your hand, people will smell, in this case, the oil. But for our case, you know, the cologne or whatever it is, you can't just cover the smell. Some people, they walk in the room and you just can't believe how they miscalculated how much cologne they needed. But I think the reason is because people get desensitized to their own smell. You wear the same smell for so long, so you don't even notice it until you put a lot more on. Meanwhile, everybody else who's not used to the smell smells it right away. The second you walk in the room, it's like, oh, so-and-so's here. How do you know? I can just smell him. You know, I can just... Some people are like that. Anyways, so that's a v'shem and yimino yikra. If you have a contentious relationship and you try to hide it, people will smell it out. People can tell. People can tell the way you talk to each other. People can tell the way you ask questions of each other. People can tell, you know, the way that you that you interact verbally or non-verbally. People will be able to tell. So that's what this pasuk is saying. And again, the remedy for that is not act better. It's not pretend better. The remedy for that is put it out in the open. Stop hiding it. Stop, neglecting the issues that you're having, and really get to do the difficult work of working through them together. And that's easier said than done, but it takes both parties to really be committed to that. For some reason, well, I know why, but I've been dealing with a lot of spousal divisions recently, mostly non-members, to be honest. I guess people just, I don't know if I'm getting a reputation of some kind, but people have reached out to me. Very sad, very sad. So the denial in both directions, whatever, I'm not getting into it, but I can imagine that they've gone through or they're going through some of these issues about the festering of neglected issues that are now making their way up to the surface, and it is irreparable because it's been festering for too long. It's very sad to see. Mirz Hashem, we should all work hard and avoid those issues. Whether it's a spouse or a friend or a colleague or, you know, even a child or a parent or whatever it is, you know, we all have relationships that can fester. With those, I was just talking about with someone today. You know, they were talking about the past and how their parent had gotten remarried, and the second spouse was adamant that the person make up with their previous spouse for the sake of their, you know, family outings and holidays and their children, meaning their grandchildren, whatever. They want the former spouse to be on good terms with their current husband, you know? And that's a real, it takes real effort for that. Someone gets divorced in a contentious divorce or whatever, and then they get remarried. You know, you can imagine the kinds of hostility, you know, that could develop between the first spouse and the second spouse. And the second spouse was like, had the foresight to say, you better make up with your previous spouse, or else this is going to be an issue for not just you and her, but her and me and the rest of the family every time we get together. We're sharing grandchildren, we're sharing family vacations or whatever. You know, we're going to see each other. We better be able to get along. And that was a real testament to that person, that they knew that was an issue and that they took care of it right away. Anyways, moving on, a well-known phrase, Barzel be Barzel Yachai. Hannah, how do they translate that one? Number 17. How does it say that?
Iron sharpens iron.
Iron sharpens iron. That's right. Yachad here is an interesting word. Usually yachad means together. Here it doesn't mean that. Here it means lachdod, means to sharpen. Iron sharpens iron. That's a well-known adage, and even in English, right? Iron sharpens, what does that mean, iron sharpens iron? So just in sort of biblical terms, what does iron represent? Iron represents aggression. Iron represents violence, right? We say in the end of Bishalach, I think, that you can't put any iron on the Mizbeach because the Mizbeach is meant to lengthen people's days and metal shortens people's days, right? I mean, the iron represents that kind of aggression and violence. So here, Barzel be Barzel Yachad, that when you put iron against iron, when you have two people that are aggressive, So then they sharpen each other. What does that mean? What in what context are we talking about? So says the says Rashi. Well, he comments on the second part. So let's look at the Mesudas David. Kemo halotesh barzel hasakin be'achar. Just like if you were to take two pieces of iron, and like you see, like the chefs do this. I've never seen it live, but you know they take one knife and they sharpen the other knife with it, right? So that's how you do it. So what is that? What's the nimshal? What's the analogy? Ritzon olomar talmidei chachamim hayoshvim yachad va'oskim haTorah hinei mechadidim zeh et zeh. If you have two learned individuals that try to understand a specific topic, they will fight it out. They will aggressively sharpen each other. What's the point? The point is, if the Gemara tells us about Metzia, that Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan used to get in these arguments, it says that when Rish Lakish died, Rish Lakish died because Rabbi Yochanan, at least according to the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan kind of insulted him by implication. You should know about this trade because you used to be a thief and whatever. Rish Lakish got all upset. And ultimately, he died from it. Rish Lakish died. Rish Lakish, who Rabbi Yochanan brought into Yiddishkeit, who Rabbi Yochanan married off his sister to him, ultimately Rish Lakish died. And the story is told that afterwards, Rabbi Yochanan was inconsolable. He went to the grave of Rish Lakish and said, "Heich at bar lakisha, where are you? I need you back in my life." So they tried, the other rabbanim, the other rabbis of the time, tried to make it better for Rabbi Yochanan. So what did they do? They had, I forgot who it was, they gave him another chavrusa, right? Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish learned together. And they gave him another chavrusa. And the Gemara says that after Rabbi Yochanan would say something, the chavrusa not only would like what he said, but he would bring in proofs from all other kinds of sources. Yeah, you're right, because this place says that, and that place says that. And you would think that, okay, wow, Rabbi Yochanan got a real good chavrusa. He tries to, you know, it gives him proof and support for what he's saying. Says Rabbi Yochanan, I really can't take it anymore. I need Rish Lakish back. So what do you mean Rish Lakish back? This guy is giving you all the support that you need. Says Rabbi Yochanan, what do you mean? This guy, when I say something, he just agrees with me. He just, every time I say something, he agrees. Rish Lakish. When I would say something, Rish Lakish would ask me 24 kashas, 24 questions. Everything I would say, Rish Lakish would ask me a question, and then I'd have to answer it. And by answering it, my ideas got better. By fighting it out, by willing to argue over it, so then my arguments were better. This guy's just saying yes to everything I say. So how do I know if what I'm saying is true? Nobody's asking me the questions I need to be asked. So that's what it's saying here. Barzel b'barzel yachad says Mitzvah David that Talmidei Chacham hayoshvim yachad ve'oskim b'Torah hinei mechadim zeh. Two chavrusas that can fight it out, that can argue l'shem shemayim. They're doing it for the right reasons. So then they will better the other one. They will make their Torah better because they'll force them to understand it better by asking them kashas. That's what Gemara is all about. That's what Tosas is all about. That's what, you know, learning Torah is all about. Fighting it out and getting to a better understanding of what it is that the Torah is trying to teach us. The story that they tell about, Rav Schechter loves to tell this story. Rav Herschel Schechter at YU said that one time cardinals came to Yeshiva University to sort of like have some understanding of what the Jews do. Yeah, it's somewhat controversial in some circles, but okay, fine. And I forgot the order of the story, but Rav Schechter says that the one takeaway that they had that they were blown away by was they went to look at the study hall, the Beis Medrash, and they saw hundreds of Talmidim, you know, sitting across from each other, one side of the table, the other side of the table, and they were learning, and they were screaming at each other. They were arguing with each other. No, this is what Rava means. No, this is what Rava means. How can you understand it like this? It doesn't make sense if you look at Rashi over here. What about the Tosfos over there? And they're arguing with each other, constantly bickering. And then the clock hit 12 o'clock. The clock struck 12. It was time for lunch. They closed their books, they got up, and they walked to lunch together. And the cardinal says, what's going on here? These people were just at each other's throats. And now they're going to eat lunch together. So Rav Schechter says, yeah, that's the beauty of Torah learning. It's not like another argument. We're not arguing for each other's own reputations. We're not arguing personal vendettas. We're not arguing some kind of, gotcha questions. We're arguing, trying to figure out what Hashem wants from us. We're both committed to the same thing. We're just coming at it from different angles. And that's what it's saying here. When done properly, barzel ba barzel yachad, you're sharpening each other. And it's betterment. It's a betterment for each other if you have that perspective. Now, this perspective is getting more and more difficult as the years go on. The more and more that we communicate without the ability to be told that we're wrong, right? The more that we, you know, consume ideas that simply agree with everything that we say, and the more we are uncomfortable with being wrong, the harder it is to sharpen ourselves. The harder it is that our arguments get better. You know, you wonder why people believe in such crazy conspiracy theories. And it's because people are incapable of seeing why they're wrong. They're incapable of embracing the questions that are given to them. Why? Because they're so committed and they're so their friend circle is so monolithic. They all believe the same thing. They all believe that the earth is flat. And the more everyone else agrees with them, just like Rish Lakish, just like Rabbi Yochanan's Chavrusa, the less their arguments become, you know, better. The less their arguments are improved. Because they're not willing to take in the questions that will challenge their opinions, be willing to be challenged by their opinions, be willing to make their opinions better. Because if that would happen, so then they wouldn't believe in these crazy conspiracy theories. But it's because of our inability to, our discomfort with being challenged, that our arguments are getting worse and worse. You find that a lot, almost with every political issue. Every argument is so, you know, everything is a catchphrase. Everything is a stump speech. Everything is, you know, the bullet points that you had pre-prepared. No one's listening to each other's questions and addressing them, you know, with a full embrace. So anyway, so that's, I think people are generally getting in a strange way. Despite the fact that we have so much information, people's opinions are getting that much more bland or unsophisticated. It's just like, this is what I believe, and no one's going to convince me out of that. Adam Grant's recent book called Think Again is a wonderful example of that. Actually, that's his second to last book. I think he came out with a book, Hidden Potential, which I just read, which was basically echoed a lot of Angela Duckworth's Grit, kind of same things. But either way, he has a book called Think Again, where he challenges people to reimagine their own opinions. V'ish yachad p'nei re'ehu. Says Rashi, yachad p'nei re'ehu. What does that mean? Yachad tamina chachamim chad nzeo zeo b'alach. Oh, he does say that at the end of the second part. But that's what Mr. Zed was saying, that when people are together, so then they make each other better. And I really think this is this follows the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk, which talked about the contentious wife that you're not able to get through the differences with. So the more that a spousal relationship is able to air their grievances, the more they're able to speak out what it is that bothers them, the better both of them will be. They'll become better people. Right? That's what the Kli Yakar says about Lo Tov Ve'Asam Lo Levado, that Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. What does it mean, Ezer Kenegdo? That Chava was opposite and helpful to Adam. So he says, because until Chava came along, Adam did whatever he wanted. And there were no repercussions, there were consequences to that. All of a sudden, now Chava's around. If Adam doesn't take out the trash, someone's going to be upset about it. And he's going to have to hear from Chava, right? That's a simplistic example, but you know what I mean. Like, if he doesn't go out and hunt that day, well, I guess Adam couldn't eat meat. But if he doesn't go out and b'zayas ha'pachato chalachim, if he doesn't till the field to get the bread, so Chava's going to go hungry, and she's going to be upset. So now he has consequences to his actions. And there's a certain push and pull there. That the more he knows he's going to be held accountable with somebody else, and she's going to air those grievances and say, hey, we made a deal. You said you were going to make the bread. And where's the bread? He knows there's an accountability, and he knows he's going to be held to the task. So that's going to make him better. Now he's going, then, tov hayos adam. Then once you have that counter, once you have that person working against you, which is helpful, Ezer Kenegdo, it's an opposition, which is a good help. It's an Ezer. So that's what's going to make you a better person. I think that I gave a drasha once on the Arba Banim. I guess my head is getting into Pesach mode with all the parshas. The Arba Banim, the four sons of the Seder. Right, you know that that part of the Seder? So the introduction of that Seder, of that portion is Kineged Arba Banim Dibur Torah. Kineged Arba Banim. And we would usually translate that in accordance to four different types of children. But the word Kineged, just like Ezer Kenegdo, means in opposition to. In opposition to four children. What does that mean? In opposite, we're against our kids? No. Every child it necessitates your oppositional reaction. My child is like this, now I have to be better to accommodate that child. There's an opposition there, but it's a helpful one. Right? We're not walking lockstep. We're not walking in the same direction. So I have to meet my child. I have to work hard, sacrifice who I am and who they are to make sure that this relationship works out. So that's what I think is Kineged Arba Banim, that in relation to, in opposition to your child, that's what the Torah wants you to do. It wants you to get better, wants you to develop. That relationship requires sacrifice. So that's what it's going to be. When people are able to, and I think there's a beautiful message in here. I don't know. I can't say Shlomo Melech had this in mind, but certainly in the time that we live in, there is a lack of Pnei Re'ehu. What is the best antidote or the best way to be willing to overcome that discomfort? The antidote to that discomfort of challenge, the antidote to the discomfort of opposition, be face-to-face. Pnei Re'ehu. You know, how many times, you know, how many arguments do you see online, right? When you're behind a computer, when you don't see the person that you're talking to. Someone recently mentioned this, and it's so true, and I've thought of myself also. You ever get on the road and somebody in front of you is like driving too slow, or they cut you off or something like that, and you're beeping at them and you're, I don't know, maybe you don't do that. I don't do that really, but unless I think they're not paying attention and someone, you know, they have to go or something, but the irony of that whole situation is the only reason you're so upset is because you're beeping at a car. But then you pull over and you see that it's a nice lady. She's just, you know, minding her business, innocent person. She made an innocent mistake. But you see the person. You see the person. You're not honking at a car. You're honking at a person. And then you feel bad about it. You feel bad about that even thought that this person doesn't know what they're doing or whatever. And it's always important to realize that you're talking to people. You know, you might see words on a screen and just see them as inanimate objects that you could, hurl slurs at. You just, insult them and ridicule them and criticize them as if like there are no repercussions. But there are people on the other side of those words. There are people on the other side of those screens. And I think the more we sort of double down on speaking to people through screens, the less we'll be able to have that comfort of engaging difficult or disagreeing opinions. I find out on WhatsApp all the time. Oy, WhatsApp is the worst. People talking to each other, but not talking. They're talking at each other, not to each other. That's how I'd say it. Or to each other, but not with each other. It's very hard because people are so insecure that they will interpret things in negative ways when they weren't meant that way. It's very, very hard. I once read a book. I forgot what it was called. It wasn't one of my top 20, so I don't remember. But it was talking about the etiquette of online diction or digital. I forgot what it was called. Digital etiquette, something like that. You know, the way that you should give over a message in text is very different than the way you give it over in person. In person, you have inflections. You have concern and care in your voice, in your eyes, in your ears, in your posture. But in a text, you don't have that. So you have to fill it, you have to be conscious of it, and you have to fill it in so that people get that message. You have to compute the nonverbal communication inside of the textual communication.
You can use exclamation
points, question marks, commas are very important. You know, sentences, structure to the sentences so you're clear. And emojis are actually very helpful to just give over the way that you say something. If someone writes something and it's supposed to be a joke and I'm not picking up on the sarcasm, they could write the same thing with a smiley face and then I get it. Because then they're making a joke, you know. But if they don't, so then... Aha, whatever, yeah, different ways of saying it. There are different ways of doing it, but to be conscious of that. And that's what I think. The way that you can overcome the discomfort of disagreements is by seeing each other. Pnei re'ehu, when you're together, you can see the faces. Pnei re'ehu, the face of your friend. So a beautiful pasuk, even if, I don't know, Shlomo Melech had this in mind, but certainly he understood that when you have face-to-face interactions, it goes a long way in terms of addressing that discomfort. Notzer te'ena yochal pirya. Those who are willing to protect the fig tree will ultimately eat from its fruit. There are many interpretations of what this means. But similarly, v'shomer adonav yechubad. Those who will be the guardian of their master will be honored. I think what this means is that the person who is willing to put the work in when it's boring will reap the benefits later on. Some explain this as referring to Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, that if you work in this world, you'll reap the benefits of the next world. Some point out that sort of within the analogy of the fig, the fig is different than other types of fruits, that you get one fig a day. I don't know this to be true, but that's what the commentaries say. The Malbim says that a fig grows like very gradually, and you only probably can pick one fig from a tree at a time. It's not like they all come to, they all ripen at the same time. You have to, you know, wait for it. And the point is that you'll take your small little, you know, benefits each and every day, and that will sustain you. So there's a lot to be unpacked there too. But what was I going to say here? I forgot. One who wishes to derive maximum benefit from his teacher. Oh, that's what it was. The Malbim goes further and says not just that you get one every day, but if you want to really benefit from the fig, who he's interpreting as the teacher which gives you the fruit, right, which sustains you. So the teacher, if you really want that, so you have to be shomer adonav. You have to really be at their beck and call. I probably haven't done this as well than other people. It's just not my personality. But if you really wanted to learn from somebody as not just a teacher, but a model of what you should be, who you should emulate, so then you have to really spend a lot of time there. I think that, some of us are a little trained to get what we want out of something faster than it usually is willing to provide. You know, so we want an answer to something. We're not going to spend more than 5 minutes trying to figure it out. But sometimes, and I think that's implied by the word shomer adonav here. Shomer is an interesting word, as Rashi told us in Parshas Vayeshev, famously the Hasidic Rebbe is always quoted. The Aviv Shemar Sadavar, that Yaakov Yoshiv Umitzap Masayavo. Yaakov waited for the day. He was willing to yearn for the day that Yosef would come to power, just like his dreams. Yoshiv Umitzap. So too here, Shomer Adonav Yechubad, maybe there's a drasha to be made here in line with the Malbim, that if you really want to, you know, benefit from your teacher, so sometimes the best way to learn is just patiently being with them. It's not one of those things, it's not like an ATM machine. You push a button here, push a button there, you get the money that you want. Sometimes it just takes time. I always point out, Kisisa time, which is, I guess, in a few weeks from now, believe it or not. Kisisa time, where we talk about the Egel Hazav. The Egel Hazav is one of the greatest contrasts in what kind of time commitments are necessary for true benefit or true, reaping of reward. Because what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu is going up to Har Sinai, going up on Har Sinai, for 40 days and 40 nights. And the Jewish people will miscalculate, as we know the Gemara tells us. And what happens? Instead, what is so? So they want a counter movement. Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to do. He is not doing it. So let's do our own thing. What's our own thing? So you would think that if you're trying to create something in place of Moshe Rabbeinu, what would you do? Another thing that's 40 days and 40 nights. Do something else. That's not what happens. When you have the desire, when you have the sort of the emotional pull towards misguided desires, so then oftentimes it happens much faster. Our worst decisions happen fast. Our worst decisions are quick and uncalculated. Our best decisions are the things that we wait for, the things that we're yearning for, the things that we're building up towards. And that's why we have, similar to what the Jewish people were supposed to do there, 4 days, 4 nights, we have Sfiras HaOmer, which is our version of waiting for Matan Torah. And so too, the Jewish people should have waited and waited. The good things take time. Good things take time. And yet, when they make the Egel Azav, in 6 hours, they're already making their Egel Azav. They slept for the... Aaron was able to hold them off for the night. That morning, they were worshiping a golden calf already. And that's the contrast between the good things take time, bad things are done quickly. And that's because you're giving into desire. So here also, I think there might be something to that. Shomer Adonav Yechubad, someone who's willing to be shomer, to guard, protect, but also take the time to yearn for whatever is to come. You know, so then they will be ultimately honored. And so it is, if you're willing to put in the small little efforts day to day, that will accrue, and you'll be able to reap the rewards later. I think that's implied in this pasuk too.
When you said that Yaakov was waiting for Yosef to come to power, I thought he didn't know that he was alive.
Oh, well, at that point in the story, he nothing happened yet. This is when Yosef told the dreams to the brothers, and that's when Yaakov gets somewhat upset at him, but then says Shamar Sadavar, but he remembered it, even though he was upset in the moment. He kept it in his head, in the back of his mind. This pasuk is so important. Kamayim hapanim lapanim, just like water reflects a face back to a face. Kein lev ha'adam la'adam. So too one's heart is reflected in another person's heart. There's a beautiful song that's a little too kitschy, the way that it's sung. But either way, it still made the rounds a few years ago from a band called Zusha. I don't know if people know Zusha. A little reggae, Jewish reggae. And they have some very beautiful songs. They all sound the same, I'm not so nuanced and sophisticated to understand the differences in different songs, but it all sounds like the same kind of genre, same kind of thing, whatever. So they have a song called Dove Bear. And I originally thought it was about Rav Dovber of Mezrich, but it was actually about some random guy that they met named Dovber. And they have a whole story about like the background to it. But the song goes, Dovber, Heilige Dovber, you mamish changed my life. You mamish changed my life. That's what they say. The first part is just, Dovber, you mamish changed my life. Okay? The second part, and I don't know what it has to do with Dove Bear, but I guess maybe he told him this. But the next part of the song is beautiful. It's a paraphrase from, I want to say, Rabbi Elazar Kayach or the Ibn Ezra in early Rishon. And it's a paraphrase, but I think it's based on this pasuk. He says, Nigunim, I nigunim, hayotzim in halev. The translation of their words, which is related to this, and it's that songs that come out of one's heart will go into another one's heart. That if you're singing from the heart, if you really mean what you're saying, then it will penetrate another person's heart. And it's so beautiful because sometimes we mistakenly think that if we say information, so another person is listening and they'll get it. But almost every time, if we want a person to really understand us, we have to really mean what we're saying. And not because, you know, we'll be more convincing, although that's true, but because that person will be more attentive when they see how much you care about what you're saying. Now there is an underlying relationship that's necessary for this to work. But assume you have a healthy relationship with the person. And when you're giving over your Torah, when you're giving over your ideas, when you're giving over instructions, you show them that it really matters to you. So then they will, it's not just that they're listening, but they're paying attention. Like they because of your relationship, they know that it matters to you. So they're going to make sure it matters to them. Right? So the same way, like a good song that comes out of the heart, it makes other people want to, you know, feel what you're feeling. There's a magnetism there. So that's what it's saying. Kamayim hapanim hapanim, just like the reflection of water. You look at water and you see yourself, right? So to somebody else who feels your heart, who feels what you mean, what matters to you, so they will reflect that same emotion. Now, there's something called mirror neurons. It's psychological. It's a real thing. That the people that you enjoy being with, you'll start copying their mannerisms. And I've noticed this myself. The different things that I have about, whatever. I know about myself. I don't have to tell you what parts of me are, just compilations of other people that I've lived with. And it didn't happen consciously. It just, you learn from a teacher and you respect that teacher and you care about being with that teacher. And that teacher has certain ways of doing things. Your body, your mind, your brain naturally computes what they're doing and includes it in your own psyche. Like you'll see they're doing what they're doing, and then it'll download. Your brain does that subconsciously. You know, and you find yourself speaking like they speak, moving your arms around like they move, have the same intonations, the same posture. You know, you'll start mimicking them because there's a natural desire to be like them. Now, it's not like something I want to be like them, so I'm going to copy their what they're. No, it's subconscious. You know, if you care about another person, so then you just start copying them. That's called mirror neurons. It happens in the micro level also. You know, if you're sitting with somebody, and I've noticed this, sometimes.
Do you mean a student in school?
Anything. Literally anybody. Literally anyone you care about that you have a positive, rapport with. You will start copying them. Your body will just naturally start doing it. And you'll notice this if you're sitting like one-on-one. I notice this a lot, ever since I've learned this, 10 years ago or whatever. I've noticed this when I sit one-on-one with people. Sometimes I start copying their body posture. Like cross your fingers like this, or you put your hand in your head like this, or, you put your arm like this, or whatever. Like you just, there's like a natural, mirroring effect. And it's a real psychological, it's a proven scientific, called mirror neurons. David Pelkovitz talks about it a lot. I forgot the context that he talked about it. But the point is, came lev ha'adam la'adam, so too, when a person sees your heart and sees what you care about, they'll start caring about that thing also, assuming you have that relationship. This has to also do with the halo effect. We're not going to get into that right now. But I find this to be very evident when it comes to, like even in a secular context, in radio show hosts or political pundits or whatever, the more emotional they are, the more popular they are. Sometimes it translates into anger. The angrier they are, the more popular they are, because people like to be angry. Whatever, that's a separate thing. But it's not. I don't think it's necessary that it has to be a negative emotion. I don't think it has to be negative anger, although that helps, feed into the survivalist instinct, which Stolen Focus talks about. I talked about it a couple months ago. But if a person's emotional, if they speak with emotion, so then it's somewhat it's magnetic. I was just listening to a podcast. It'll probably be my featured podcast for the, at least as of now, for the February newsletter. I was listening to a podcast called Headlines, usually with Moshe Lichtenstein. This time was with his substitute host, and he was talking about people's opinions on Eretz Yisrael and supporting the army, no matter what hashkafa you are, whatever, not getting into it. But he interviewed a Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. People know Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. He's become more and more popular. He has a real online presence. And it was a podcast, which means I wasn't watching it, although I then found the video of it afterwards. But I wasn't watching it. But you could hear in his voice how much he cared about things, how emotionally he connected, and it was just, it was impactful. It's, you know, you can't help but only respond naturally in kind to the emotionality that he's putting into his words. They reflect in your heart. You feel, you start feeling it yourself. So that's what it means here. Kein lev ha'adam la'adam. You know, if you really want to, if you want other people to care about what you're caring about, so you have to show them you care. You have to put your heart into what you're doing. Okay, last.
Why Jacobson was the one that was
speaking? Yeah, he was very emotional when he spoke about supporting the Israeli army. Yeah. Sha'ol va'avado lo sisbana. Sha'ol va'avado. Oh, this is interesting. The English here doesn't put the psukim together like I thought they would. Either way. As the grave and Gehenna are not sated, V'enei ha'adam lo sisbana. So to the eyes of man are not satiated. What does that mean? Rashi says, Milakabel as harshan l'tocham, k'shem she'enei ha'adam rasha lo tisbana, milishot achar yetzahara, milmalos tavaso. Just like Gehenim is not Gehenim, meaning like the ultimate, you know, resting place for Rishayim, or not ultimate, but temporary resting place. So Gehenim is not able to hakevra v'hakevra enam sivei milkavah anashim. I think that means that the grave is never filled up. You know, the world will always you know will continue being filled with bodies. You know, just like there are never enough people going to Gehenim, or Gehenim is always willing to take more people, which is an interesting use of this. Of this analogy, so too people and their desires are never satiated. There are other psukim that say the same thing, but long story short, the point is that a person who has certain desires, whether it's wealth, whether it's, you know, promiscuity, whether it's you know, imbibing different chemicals, whether it's just general, you know, food. So if their eyes still burn with that desire, so they will never be satiated by it, because they will continuously want more and more, even if they might have a temporary, you know, satiation or satisfaction. It won't be very long until they need more to satisfy themselves. So I think, you know, the reason why the juxtaposition is used with Gehenim is because obviously if you have that perspective and you're not willing to try to restrain yourself, so then it will ultimately lead you to that end. That's the only thing I can think of about why it's there. It's probably,
you're talking about one of the things could be overeating.
Yeah, it could be anything. You eat a nice juicy steak, and then it's 3 hours later, you're hungry again. Yeah. Right, that kind of thing. Yep, yeah, you just filled up. Yep, now I'm hungry again because I want more. You know, the inability to hold yourself back is going to just continuously pop up again and again and again. Easier said than done, but we should try to have the restraint that will allow us to stay healthy. Whatever it is, whether it's food or otherwise. Easier said than done. Wish everyone haslach in doing that. Lots of wonderful, wonderful drushas here tonight. You can't hide contentious spouse or relationship. It's going to come out in the end of the day, so you better sort of embrace the issues and try to overcome them. Iron sharpens iron, being willing to listen to other people's opinions which disagree with yours, confront them and thereby refine your own opinions. Someone who's willing to wait will benefit from the ultimate rewards, like the fig tree. And you want someone else to be motivated like you're motivated, so you have to show them your heart. If you show them your heart, their heart will be similarly activated. And then to know that your desires aren't fully realized if you're incapable. Of restraining them. Okay, we'll continue Mirat Hashem in 2 weeks. I think next week is Legends and Lessons, Mirat Hashem. Okay, everyone have a good night.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Thanks for coming. Thanks, Evan. Go Blue.